Yeah, we will be in Deuteronomy, the 7th and 8th chapter today. But before I begin there, there are some things that I would like to be able to share with you, if you don't mind. I'm not quite sure how I can explain what I'm going to explain to you, so I'm just going to let spit it out. In the Christian world, I'm not anti-Christian, just listen to me for a minute. In the Christian world, they really accentuate upon the love of Jesus an awful lot. And there's a missing thing about that, and because so many doctrines and people are looking at only at a Son of God as one who is very compassionate, very loving, very kind, very merciful, and to some degree, even more so than his own father. Because they have a concept that is hard to accept. And sometimes when Yeshua is sometimes downright angry, and remember the time, the chapters, he cursed an awful lot of cities. They can't picture someone who loves people and cherishes people and cares about people would ever do that. Or even bring forth an accusation, should we say, of the scribes and the Pharisees teach the commandments of men. And he says, woe unto you, you scribes and you Pharisees. You know, it's like just a nice thing to say. You're not showing love and compassion. You should teach them and show them the word of God. Show how wonderful God is instead of saying these horrible things. But people kind of overlook those things. So I'm not in a dilemma. The young man that I am writing to, I do some thinking. He says, I'm going to just read some of the stuff I put down here. There has arisen a concern that I do not teach about the love of Yeshua, nor one's love toward Yeshua, but only teach the law of God, and that one can only be sanctified by keeping the law. I have been accused of not teaching the love of Jesus, but only that the letter of the law, one is sanctified. Now, we know what the Torah says, that we are cleansed by when we hear the commandments, the statutes, the judgments, and respond to them. That is a process of cleansing. When Yeshua told his disciples, you are clean now by the words I have said, he wasn't even dead yet. So there's a cleansingness that God does. Now, I continue on with what I'm going to say to you. There are times that one begins to study the Torah, that one may get to a point that the Torah does not have much connection, if any, to Yeshua. Because it's very strong. It's very powerful. It's very, in a lot of ways, very threatening to an awful lot of people. And this is the reason why many believe that Yeshua was the one who gave us, quote, grace by changing some of the statutes, judgments, and commandments, which are in the Torah, and even taught against the Torah in some cases. And it's really hard to go back and try to explain to someone that's not exactly what he's doing. He's expounding on or explaining, like Jeff said, on the certain laws that we saw there in Matthew. He came back to the original writing and said, this is what it's really talking about. But it's really kind of hard. So I told him, I says, Psalms 32 does show us Elohim has always forgiven sins, always has forgiven transgressions, and always has forgiven iniquities. It's not based upon what the Messiah does or does not do. It's what the Creator of heaven does. And he sent his Son for only one reason. And that's to purify the innermost part of us. And the reason why I'm saying this to you is because I think it's very important to help me, perhaps, more than you. Because I have to struggle internally. How do I address the statements of the Christian world without being angry? And I'm not an angry man, but I have to be careful what I say and be not soft but firm. And I said, you know, John 3, Then verse 30, Yahshua says, I and the Father are one. And then Hebrews 13:8, it says, Yahshua, Messiah, is the same yesterday and today forever. Has he changed? Now, if he and the Father are one, and he says we are the same, what did he change? And to get to my point, I wanted to talk to you, just a real brief, if you just share with me for just a minute. He says there, and we know John 1:17, for the law was given, or the Torah was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And we know that in Greek, that's no such word as and or but. If you put the word and in there, we would have a different kind of belief system. But basically, throw them all out, and you have basically just this. The Torah and grace and truth are connected together as unity of Echad. They're not separated. So I went to Revelations and showed him the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. And most people don't understand what the song of Moses is. What is the song of Moses? What is it telling us? Is the song of the Lamb singing against the Torah, the statutes, the judgments, and the law? Is he singing against that? See, in the Christian world, they believe there's a complete separation between the two. And yet, in the Revelations there, it says the song of the Lamb, and in those words it says, your judgments have been manifested, Almighty God. It's not addressing the Messiah. It's addressing Almighty, El Shaddai. Like Tony, there's a conflict that sometimes that people read. It seems a very strong counter or contradiction in Hebrews 10 compared to Hebrews 8. Hebrews 10 says, for the Torah, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things to come, can never with these same sacrifices which we have offered continually, year by year, make those who approach perfect. But then the 8th chapter says something different, doesn't it? For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my law, my Torah, in their mind and write them in their heart. I see the two songs now. The Torah is what is going into your mind. It's there, it being solid. You understand on the statute, the judgments, and the commandments. You got that. Your brain is thinking. You figured it out. Where does it go from there? Now it enters into the heart. How does it enter the heart? By and through the death of Yahshua. Now you begin to love the Torah. That's why the two songs, in your mind first, then in your heart. Because Yahshua should affect our innermost heart. It really should. And it's kind of a hard thing to explain. As we go into Deuteronomy, the 4th, 7th, and 8th chapter, there's very interesting things that are repeated in this particular 7th chapter 15 times. So with that, my comment to you, I just want to show you what I'm hoping that God will grant me great understanding and words of wisdom and words of compassion. But it's also told him, yes, the Torah has a reputation. And its reputation is that it's very offensive. But it's always truthful, no matter what.
Richard, if I could, when you were talking about those things, one of the things that came building on what you were talking about last week on the fear of the Lord.
Oh.
In Psalm 147:11, it's a great passage that says, the Lord favors. That word favor there is the idea of the Lord pardons, you could say.
Right.
Those who fear him. Those who wait for his chesed, his loving kindness, which It's in Greek. It's the same word that's used in the New Testament for mercy.
Yeah, you're making me emotional upset here right now.
Well, because it goes to the point that in Proverbs 1 builds on that same idea. The fear of the Lord, the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. It starts first with a fear or respect of who God is.
Oh, yeah.
But then waiting for His mercy. Waiting for His mercy.
Doesn't come before. Okay.
The Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them. Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. But thus you shall deal with them. You shall destroy their altars and break down their sacred pillars and cut down their wooden images and burn their carved images with fire. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for Himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set His love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any other people, for you were the least of all peoples. But because the Lord loves you, and because He would keep the oath which He swore to your fathers, the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Therefore know that the Lord your God, He is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations, with those who love Him and keep His commandments. And He repays those who hate Him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack with them who hates Him. He will repay him to his face. Therefore, you shall keep the commandment, the statutes and the judgments which I command you today to observe them. Then it shall come to pass, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you the covenant and the mercy which He swore to your fathers. And He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flock, in the land of which He swore to your fathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There shall not be a male or female barren among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will take away from you all sickness and will afflict you with none of the terrible diseases of Egypt which you have known, but will lay them on all those who hate you. Also, you shall destroy all the peoples whom the Lord your God delivers over to you. Your eyes shall have no pity on them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that will be a snare to you. If you should say in your heart, "These nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them?" You shall not be afraid of them, but you shall remember well what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw, the signs and the wonders, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm, by which the Lord your God brought you out, so shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet among them, until those who are left, who hide themselves from you, are destroyed. You shall not be terrified of them, for the Lord your God, the great and awesome God, is among you. And the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you, little by little. You will be unable to destroy them at once, lest the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them over to you, and will inflict defeat upon them until they are destroyed. And He will deliver their kings into your hand, and you will destroy their name from under heaven, no one shall be able to stand against you until you have destroyed them. You shall burn the carved images of their gods with fire. You shall not covet the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, lest you be snared by it. For it is an abomination to the Lord your God. Nor shall you bring an abomination into your house, lest you be doomed to destruction like it. You shall utterly detest it and utterly abhor it, for it is an accursed thing. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember the Lord your God, led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that the man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest, when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness, in which you were fiery serpents and scorpions, and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who led you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, and that he might test you to do good in the end. Then you say in your hearts, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that it may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God, and follow other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, you shall perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God.
Right? And a few comments here first. The words in the book of Deuteronomy, it does center around three very major things. What are they? The what? Yeah, statutes, judgment, commandments. And when we have come in our world, our life, come to understand, because fear comes first, is like Jeff was referring to earlier, and then we come and we begin to hear And then we begin to say, why have you written this statute? Why have you pre-programmed the task in advance before even I have existed as a human being? What is your reason behind it? As time goes by, we begin to understand. And he says, because I love you. And you say, okay, what does that mean? Why then are you punishing me so much? Because I love you. And sometimes it's a little hard. And it's in this chapter, in these chapters, 7 and 8, there's an overall thing that's repeated over and over and over again. In the 7th chapter, it's repeated 15 times. And basically, to understand it in English, it just means the Lord, your God. 15 times is repeated here in the 7th chapter. That's an awful lot. In the 14th chapter, it's repeated 14 times. In the 5th chapter, it's repeated 11 times. In the 6th chapter, it's repeated only 5 times or 6 times. In the 8th chapter, it's repeated 9 times. So we get a picture here. Now, that word being used over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And Moses is really reasoning and reusing that word over and over and over and over again to nail in a point. Now, as he goes into this thing, we're going to find out why. It says, Elohecha, Elohecha, your Elohim. He does things. What does he do? Well, the first thing we see is that he delivered you from the house of bondage. Your God did that, nobody else. No one else did it for you. I am the one. I am your Elohim. I am your God. And so he starts some of the commandments. We say, here's an order. I'm giving you a commandment here. Remember, commandment is like an order. It's not a statute, it's not a judgment. It's an order. And here in this chapter, we see, in verse 2, he said, you know, those nations which I'm going to deliver them unto you. Now, he doesn't say those that you go out and get. Or you go out and you fight yourself against. No, the ones I deliver unto you. We're talking military army, of course. I don't want you at any point in time to have mercy upon them, and do not make a deal. In other words, do not give a, quote, peace treaty. Put it in our modern terminology. I want you to eliminate them. That's a pretty powerful and powerful God, isn't it? At the very same time, it sounds like, he has no compassion again. He has no love, no mercy, and nothing. And we see here, as we go into the 8th chapter, a little bit of wording that he's very, very careful with. And basically, it's a warning against those that God has called, not those that God has not called. We'll get to that in a minute. And another commandment that he said, you will not marry any of them, and they are not to marry any of you. I mean, you know, wives and husbands, and that back and forth. Very clear. Don't associate with them. Remember he said before, they are everything they do is an abomination unto me. What they have done to their Elohim is an abomination to me. And so they go to there, and he says, now I want you to destroy things. Now the altars, and we break down the images, and I want you to cut down the groves and all the things that have graven images. And he says, now, verse 7, he says, Yahuwah did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more than the others. House of Israel is smaller. That's a significant number. I was thinking about that. We say, well, it's a huge number. We're talking 600,000 men. They were smaller than the one that God was going to destroy. And we'll talk about that little by little in a little bit, how God was going to do that. Verse 9, he says, now I want you to be careful of, this is your, I am your Elohim, I am your God. And he says, I am Elohim, basically, and I'm a faithful one. I will stick with what I have said. I'm not going to alter it. I'm not going to justify it. I'm just going to say, I am very faithful, and you can depend upon me that I will do exactly what I said I will do. You remember the past. So that's what they get. And he says, and that he is the one that keeps the covenant. He's the one that grants mercy. He's the one that loves him and wants those who keep the commandments. And so we see here in verse 10, very important one. He's talking to, Moses is talking to the house of Israel. And he says, this is what your God said. What did he say? I will repay them that hate Yahuwah. Hate your God. Oh, what if you are amongst them? As you begin. Now he warns about this later on in this chapter, previous chapter, that you can begin to forget. Or you begin to become proud of what you have accomplished in your life, being a successful businessman, being a successful housewife, being a successful husband. Wait a minute. It comes from Devarim Elohim. He's the one that says, I will do it. All I want you to do is pay attention closely. And you can depend upon me. You can count upon me. And this is what this basically the book of your Elohim, your God, the Lord your God, you can depend that he will do. One of those things he says he'll intend to do, and Moses is saying that he, your Elohim, will face those that hate him literally face to face, in a sense. And he says he's not going to be slack. And when he responds, he's going to be not delaying his actions. We say, well, wait a minute. Yes, he does. He always delays. Well, no, not really. We start looking around and watching people, nations and countries and other peoples who go against Elohim, especially in this particular case, the people of Israel. They're going to pay a heavy price quickly and fast, quick and fast. There's no delay on it. And he does this because you can rely upon him. And he says, I will. It's funny in Hebrew. He repays them and repeats. He will repay to his face. Basically, the person will come to know. This did not come from any other source. What has happened here, you could depend upon that God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Israel, their God, our God, the Lord your God, is going to deal with him on a one-to-one basis, face-to-face. Now, how close is God? And sometimes we think he's way off in the distance. And therefore, he says, because he's going to deal with a person face-to-face, 11th verse says, therefore, for this reason, guess what you need to do? We need to make sure that we keep his commandment or commandments, which is mishpah or mishpati, mishvaot. Means commandments. Mishvaot means commandments. Not good deeds, not wonderful things, not being kind to your neighbor, not, you know, going out and say, oh, I'm going to pick apples today for somebody. No. Has to do with the word of the commandment of God. His, nobody else's. That's what a mitzvot is all about. All right? And the statutes. and the judgments. Mishpat. Or Mishpatim. Plurality. Judgments. Those are the ones. If you want to make sure you're on the good side of God, remember, it's not whether God is on our side. That's not the issue, is it? It's whether we're on His side. That's what matters, right? How can we be on His side? Well, here, Moses is telling them, it's going to be bad news if you are not on His side. He's going to deal with you. And woe unto anyone who does. He tells them to make sure you do not. Verse 18, do not forget something. Don't be afraid of them, and don't forget that it's God who they deliver your God who delivered you out. Verse 19. He says, great tribulations, which means, like he read, it's with great testings. Your own eyes saw it. You saw what took place. You saw the mighty hand. You saw what took place. Your God, your Elohim, who brought you out. Your God, your Elohim, whom people should be afraid of. Moreover, your God, your Elohim, will send, and this is Old English, a hornet. You ever heard the word hornet before? Pretty odd word. And it doesn't really mean a bee or a hornet. It, in Hebrew, it breaks down from a verb meaning to scourge with or to stricken with like a plague or a disease. And it does have to do with, in a sense, with what you think of a bee. Meat is going to sting, and it's really going to come fast. Have you ever been stung by a bee before? Did it finally register? You finally got bit by a hit sting, or just instantly you know you were stung? On the spot, quick and fast. And he says, I'm going to deal with the enemy that way. I'm going to drop down to verse 25. It's very awkward wording here. And the reason why I'm going to talk about this one, because sometimes people have different ideas. That's okay. He says, now, the graven or the carved images of their Elohim, you shall burn with fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them. Well, that's kind of awkward in English. Nor take it unto thee. Lest thou be snared therein, was an abomination. Now we stop and think about this for just to have a second. When the Israelites left Egypt, what did the Egyptians do? Gave them a lot of gold and silver. Now do you think that gold and silver might have had images on it that was contrary? Yes. So what happens when they're supposed to do? You know what they did with that, those images? They actually put it in fire. What happened? The image is gone. The gold is still there, the silver is still there, and that was used to do what? The tabernacle and the priesthood. That's what they used the gold for. So in the very same sense, he says, now when you melt this down, when you put their images into the fire, don't desire what the silver, the gold looked like at one time, because the very next verse tells you very plainly. And it says, neither shalt thou bring an abomination into the house. What abomination? That image. Now, we have a tendency in our country, in our world, that there are certain things that are just what we call an artifact, or it's a historical, whatever it is for a nation or people. It's made out of gold, made out of silver, and we cherish it. We honor it. We give it glory. We give it praise. We put it in our museums. Right? What did God say? Burn them. What do you got left when you burn it all down? You've got gold. You've got silver. Now form it into what I want you to form it into. That which is holy and just and good. Because he said something. All the gold is mine. and all the silver is mine. And what we do with the gold, what we do with the silver that God has said, oh, I'm passing it on to you for you to use it, and we make it into an image, that becomes an abomination. Gotta burn it. You know, I don't think I have any gold images, but I might have. Who knows? Yes?
Question is, okay, so if it, for instance, okay, we, my husband and I, we were in charge of the missions room at our Christian church. And the missionaries would come back with artifacts of the mission tribes that they...
Oh, yes.
And they had masks and these things. And, of course, we took it all in. And we had it in our basement for a while, and then we brought it to the church and had a room there with all these things. They weren't golden, they weren't silver, but they were...
You're still supposed to destroy it, burn them.
Witch doctor's things, you know.
And, yeah, yeah. Because and, it's a snare.
Well, it was a snare to us.
Right, yeah. And when you take a golden image, that is of a different Elohim or a different God, and we want to keep it, we want to preserve it, what happens to our society when we start doing that? We start giving honor and glory unto, oh, we don't think it's to God, but really are giving it glory to the God of those people who worshipped a pagan thing or worshipped a different Elohim. And now for the house of Israel. Now, it doesn't say we as human beings should go out and go door to door and find out anybody's got a golden image and start burning it. That's not our job. You understand, it's not as an individual thing. This is a nation by nation. And here he's telling them, when you go into that land, which is an abomination to me, what they're doing is, and any I deliver unto you, destroy their images, destroy their idols, destroy everything, because we snare to you. Yes?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, this would seem to preclude a lot of archaeology.
Oh, yes.
But... An interesting thing to think about it in modern days, we say, well, you know, what the Taliban did over there and blowing up the big Buddhas in Afghanistan was a great travesty to history.
Yes.
Because, you know, these things have been there for several hundred years. Well, it's one of those things, is like, okay, take a snapshot, then dynamite them. You know, so you record them, put them on your clay tablets or whatever, then burn them. But at least you record the abomination and then torch them. But it is interesting that you put them in the museum, and what indeed has happened over time with the secularization of society is that instead of God being Echad, we have made him Ahar, another God.
Yes.
Because it's like you go into the museum, and then there's this God of Israel over here. He's in the East Wing, and over there in the West Wing, we've got the Egyptology. So
yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah, Ellie has something to say now.
They have the God of Egyptology and archaeology. Sometimes they don't even bother to put the God of Israel in a wing.
Just one other comment. You know, I tend to wonder, you know, like the frog is... was a god of Egypt too, wasn't it? A frog?
But the people
honored these animals and owls and things like that. And then us ladies like to have collections of, oh, okay, I got all these little frogs all over my cupboard here, and they're all so cute, you know. Is that also this part of this images of God?
My answer to you would be a simplicity of the word is yes. I don't know anything about the gods of ancient Israel, Egypt at all. I'm kind of really ignorant of those things. I know they had all sorts of things. I've heard certain things, you know, and I know that about the hawk. It also was worshipped in the, you know, and what else? We know the snake was worshipped, and what else? The cat was worshipped, and I don't know what else is worshipped. But those are created things that God created, and they turned into an image, saying, God, as what the Israelites did when Moses delayed coming down from the mountain. They created an image out of gold. What happened? What did Moses do? He melted it down, right? Good example, right? But it's a great artifact. Now, there's one other thing that was made during Moses' time. When was it destroyed? Made out of gold. What's a brass? Brass, okay. Bronze. What was it? The serpent on the stick. Because why? They began to believe it was healing them. Okay, not picturing it's the Messiah. Who's going? Yes, Jeff.
Well, to Ann's question there, the Apostle Paul mentioned something about that, and especially in the context of food sacrificed to idols, and the idea that if, you know, he was mentioning, well, you know, the idols and the gods that they're supposedly representing are nothing, but if someone else sees that and thus still has some association with them, you don't eat it, or that sort of thing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because of the association with the idol. Well, the thing is that a representation of something could be just a representation of something versus an idol that someone has attached representation of a deity to. Like geckos.
A gecko, you know, in there.
Exactly. When does something become a picture of something, and when does something become an idol of something?
Yeah.
You know, is it a picture of a bird, or is it a picture of Osiris? You know, what is it?
It brings you good luck.
That's why. That's what people turn that thing into, is the evil part. You know, or they even make a horrible, ugly thing, no matter, not made from the mind of God at all, not even part of creation. It's a really ugly looking thing, and they worship it. You know, some people worship. I'm almost going to say some people worship television, and some people worship TV. Some worship, artificial things that have no value. iPod, telephone, a cell phone. Yes. Yeah, no.
Speaking of that, I remember reading a book. I think it was like when I was in high school or college. It was this little book, and they were making a point that if some aliens from another planet or somebody who had never known anything about our culture whatsoever, they were to walk into your living room, let's say.
Yeah.
What is in the center of your living room? And for most people, it is a television.
Yes.
And you turn this thing on, and these images come on, and people stare, and they're affixed to it, and they respond to it, right? So this book was
sometimes
making...
Sometimes my wife even yells at it.
So this book was making the point that some alien or somebody who was from totally different culture, had no prior knowledge of our culture, would maybe think that in that household they worship that thing. It's in the center of the living room. It's everyone pays attention to it, and it's on all the time, giving them messages. So that must be their god.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Something to think about.
So. On the eighth chapter, it's also very short. It's only 20 verses, I think it is. Yeah. And your Elohim, or your God, the Lord your God, is mentioned only 9 times here. But you get a picture from 4th chapter all the way to 9th chapter. We don't need the 10th, 11th, 12th, that way. That is talking about a particular, it's yours. The one who brought you forth out of the bondage. Remember, I want to focus in on verse 2. Old English here. I'm going to read it. Okay. Now, this is Moses saying something. As they go into the promised land, he says, thou shalt remember all the way which Yahuwah thy Elohim led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee and to prove thee, to know that what was in thy heart, whether thou would keep his commandments, his mitzvot, or mitzvah, or not. So the 40 years where God had put them in, and the other chapter talk about horrible places, not good places. Some places were not bad, but some places were bad, just downright uncomfortable. And for 40 years he did something else. Verse 3, and he humbled thee, or thee, and suffered thee to be hungry. Did you see that? Now remember the complaints? We don't have any food to eat. Okay. He deliberately, on purpose, was full knowledge and understanding and capability within himself to say, I'm going to make those people hungry. Gave them nothing to eat. Oh, God is not fair. He should be kind and compassionate, and the people are hungry. He should give food. He should. Now, remember the new moon thing? He says, we never hunger. That's not a very good statement, though, because there he made them hunger for food, right? They technically didn't lack, but they didn't get, and they got hungry. I'm not saying, have you ever been hungry before? Except maybe the Day of Atonement. But, you know, but sometimes I've heard people say, I'm famished, you know, because they haven't had anything to eat. They work so hard, they can't eat. But, you know, because I want you to remember these things. And he suffered you and fed you with manna. Why? Famous quote here. The Messiah himself used it. Now, so that you will know for sure you cannot live on manna. What did Jesus say? He says they had manna. What happened when Jesus said that? And they died. Manna is not the angel food that gives you everything you want. No, it was just enough. What happens if you try to keep it? Rot it out. You can't do it. What if it took too much? Oh, it rotted out. Except upon, of course, Friday, you got twice as much, and you could keep, then you could have it on Shabbat. That was it. And so, now this is not the only thing he said, okay? Verse 8. Remember all the way. Everything that has happened to you and it's 40 years of wilderness, these remember everything, including that you cannot live on manna alone. You will die. You can't live on it alone. Now, to prove that you still are alive, because here you are, you're still alive, ready in the promised land. And by the way, your clothes. How many of you had to make clothes? Not one of them. Oh, yeah. And guess what? All that walking and that walking and that walking uphill, downhill, through the creeks, through up, everywhere, for 40 years wandering, all those 40 places, your feet weren't even swelling. You had no sore toe. You had no blisters. Your feet weren't killing you. You weren't tired. Your feet were capable of doing it all. Now, is that, you know, just a happenstance? Okay, so when they started traveling, remember they traveled from Etam, which is the edge of the wilderness, all the way across the Sinai Peninsula in 5 days. Move, 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 and there they were. Quickly and fast. You mean they were good runners? Healthy, wise, strong? Well, yeah, we can give them credit on that one. But no, God said, your feet didn't even hurt when you walked that much. And we also know that the other areas of sandals didn't even wear out. I mean, how many times have you had shoes that had to rebuy new ones after 40 years? David.
The manna that he was providing
had all the nutrients that they needed as well. So God fully took care of them, that their feet didn't swell even.
Yeah, okay. That's a good approach to look at it. I've never looked at it from that point of view, but I just kind of find it interesting. But the point is that we're looking here, seeing the first chapter 8, almost finished here. I want to go to verse 14, chapter 8. Now he says, do not forget. Remember. Do not forget. Remember. Now what happens when you become very wealthy and you become very self-secure? You have a nice, wonderful home. You're well solid. Your family is healthy. You've got a good income. Your business is working great. What happens? He says, I don't forget where I brought you out of. And our world brought you out of sin and transgression and iniquity. That's where I brought you out of, which is heading for hell. I don't mean Gehenna far. I mean, you're going to death. You're going to the grave. Broke. Don't remember, he is the one that led you through the great and terrible wilderness, wherein there were fiery serpents, scorpions, drought, and no water. He was the one that brought thee forth water out of a rock. You stop and think about that. I know, I've heard the thing on television now. It really was water in the rock. All they had to do was split it open and water would come out. All they had to do, the water was always there. Uh-huh. Sure. They tried to split it open, these flint rocks or these rock sand rocks, and nothing. It just split the rock apart. Nothing came out of it except the shattered pieces of sandstone all over the place. Nothing too worthless. Now, I grant you that sandstone can hold water. But not forever, because it's got a bunch of holes in it. It's not like a sponge. It just goes right through it. Back into the ground. He says, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna that thy father did not even know about, never even heard about, for to humble you, that you might be proved to what is good in thy latter end. Oh, latter end? When it is all finished and the end comes, remember what your God did and that your God is faithful all the way to your latter end. Isn't that fascinating? You've noticed that before? Of course, he said, now if you feel, of course, that you gain it all by yourself because of your great wealth and wisdom and knowledge, he says, he's the one that gave you, he read it today, power to get wealth. Gave you the opportunity to make money. Gave the opportunity to invest in the right thing. It's not that I'm a wise investor. No, I'm not. It's not that you're a wise home maker. No, you're not. It's not that you're wise in your business that it increases and it multiplies and able to bring in employees and make a lot of money and all great blessings you've had. No, it's not. It says here, who is the credit? Your Elohim. Your God. I also told this man in Kenya that I wanted to make sure that he understood the greatest thing that God has ever done, Elohim has ever done, was to send his son to take away from within us in our actions, in our deeds, in our thoughts, the tendency to, and to quote, take sin and utilize it or just do it, transgression, and just say, okay, I just transgressed, and iniquities, those things were really lawlessness. It has given us something different. Has given us the joy of the commandments. He's given us the joy of the statutes. He's given us the joy of the judgments. And God has granted us with great internal blessing because it gives us to understand Him. Because what does Scripture say? If you're going to boast, boast on this, that you know me. Not that you believe me. Not that you like me. Not that you worship me, but you know me. And that's what the statutes do. And that's what the judgments do. And that's what the commandments do. And I want to know him. Remember Moses said the very same thing? Heading up the mountain the second time. And then God let him know who he really was. And what happened to Moses when he came down the second time? The face was shone with great brightness and glory and honor. I mean, just unbelievable. They couldn't even look upon it. Frightful to look upon it.